Hey, what's up, guys? It's Ezra here at Moto247, and welcome to episode 30 of the Moto247 show. Really pumped about this episode today. Not only that, really excited that we're finally getting some more podcasts going. As you guys know, we might unfortunately do one or two episodes within a 1 to 2 week span, then we have a super long break until our next one, and that really kills me being behind the mic because I think we could be potentially a lot better if we were doing them, weekly or something. But it really been aiming to do some more, at least a few a month, and so far I've had two this week, have one planned for a couple days from now, so it'll be three within 1 week, so I'm really excited about that, and finally getting some more episodes up for you guys, and I also really enjoy making these myself. I know me and Tom always have a lot of fun, and anyways, getting into today's episode was a really good one with a physical therapist from Australia. His name is David Hogan, and you might know him from following his Instagram page, which is on Instagram at always.moto. It's a really good page that I always share their posts on my stories because I just really like his content on there. Because like I said in the episode, once you listen to it, you'll hear me say this a lot, but there's a lot of motocross pages, especially since when Moto247 started back in 2014, and there's just a lot of motocross pages that try to do the same thing, and it really sucks. But his is a lot different, and I think it's the only one out there that does what he does. He breaks down every injury. Okay, here's what happened to this rider. He breaks down what happened during the injury, like what got affected, and explains everything really good. And then he, says how long they're going to be out for, and really goes into detail there because, as you guys know, as fans, we don't know too much. Like, they might make a press release that so-and-so got hurt, but we don't know how long he's going to be out, if it's going to affect him when he gets back out on the track. We're all just kind of left out in the dark, and we're on his page. He really goes into it, so you have like a lot of knowledge, even if you're not too knowledgeable on the whole physical therapy or anything, fitness or health related at all. He really breaks it down into really good detail and makes it really clear what happened to the rider. So, like I said earlier, I'm really pumped about this episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. It was a fun one for me. And I also want to give a big shout out to our newest sponsor here on the show, which is Blood Lubricants. As you guys know, it's really important to have really good oil in your bike. Be like Joey Crown, Alex Ray, Kyle Chisholm, Logan Carnow, and the whole SGB Honda team, and many more by using Blood Lubricants. Go over to their website and use code MOTO247 for 25% off on most products they have on there. Again, that's MOTO247 and all caps. MOTO247 for 25% off on most products on their website. Go over there. Their link to their website is in their Instagram bio. So go over there and find them on Instagram as well at Blood Lubricants. If you guys are looking to get graphics for your bike, your snowmobile, or even get a helmet wrap, I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. Aaron at Prism does an amazing job. The graphics look so sick, and not only do they look really cool, the quality of those graphics are top-notch too, and I have a set on my pit bike, and man, they look cool. I have that Geico theme going on, and well, rest in peace, Geico Honda. Anyways, have that going, and it looks sick, but not only that, but the quality of them is really great, and that's something I was really pumped on, actually, because there's a lot of companies out there that the graphics look really cool, really clean. You can post your picture on Instagram, and the bike looks so sick, but you have a weekend on the bike of doing a couple motos and they're starting to peel and everything, and that's just really frustrating. And that's the complete opposite with Prism. The quality of them is really great, and they're at an affordable price too, so I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. You can find them on Instagram at PrismDesigns_company, and then the link to their website is right there in their bio, so definitely recommend you check out Prism. And I'm also really excited to have a brand new grip company on board with us. I want to give a big shout out to Whiskey Throttle Grips. They make grips and apparel, half waffle, and soft compound grips. Go over and check out their Instagram at whiskey_throttle_grips. Go on there, see what they have going on and all their cool grips. And right in their bio is their link to their website. So go check them out on Instagram, hit that follow button, and click that link in the bio. First off, before we start here, I want to give you guys a heads up that unfortunately we have had audio issues here today, which is really weird, a freak incident that it sounded great while we were recording the episode, then it went to go save into the platform and it just got all mixed up and wacky. which is really unfortunate. It's our second time having audio issues in the 30 episodes we've been doing this podcast. So it just really sucks. The first time being Nate Adams, which is obviously going to be a really good podcast. And with this one is better, though. We didn't lose any content, though. So that's good on this one. But I just want to give you guys a heads up. At the beginning, it's all over, but it gets a lot better, and it only happens every once in a while. Then the last 40 minutes of our podcast here with David, I actually am using the recording I had on a backup device that, thank God, I thought of like halfway through the podcast, and I set a backup device in place, and just in case we had any issues like we did in the Nate Adams podcast where we lost like 20 minutes of the segment there. But yep, anyways, I just want to give you guys a heads up, and I'm really sorry about that. I'm definitely bummed about that, and we are working our butts off trying to get it so we won't ever have audio issues like that ever again.
And we're going, episode 30 of the Moto 247 show, and I'm here with the man behind Always Moto. What's up?
I'm doing good. How are you?
It's pretty good over here. How's it going over there in Australia?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been a little wet the last few weeks over here on the east coast of Australia.
The riding's been a little bit
hit and miss, but hopefully
looking for some dry time.
It's coming in summer, so it should be good.
Cool. So first off, can you introduce yourself and tell your listeners what you do and what Always Moto is all about?
Yeah, of course. So look, my name's David Hogan. My background, in terms of training and stuff is I'm a physiotherapist, or in America you call it physical therapist. But yeah, so I'm a physio. I've also done some exercise and sports science training. So
personal trainer
a few years back, but I've been a physio now for about 10 years. And look, we just sort of jumped into this thing where we found a hole in some of the media engaged around just reporting what happened on the day at the race, who won, who got second, all that sort of business, and felt that some of the injury reporting wasn't there, and I always wanted more info. And physio, if you've ever sat down and watched a race or a football game with a physio, whenever something happens as an injury, usually the physio just basically points out straight away what that was.
Any info,
not needing anything, just what can see what they did, and what the injury is from your training. So I felt that I could bring some insight into that for some people, and just talk about where the riders have been and why they've been out for so long. So started doing this thing called Always Moto, and yeah, just been trying to point out some of the injuries for people so that you guys can
go through and why some of them
are such badasses when they come back really quick.
Oh, for sure. And I absolutely love your page. I forgot when I first saw it, but I'm like, this is perfect, because there's so many motocross pages on Instagram and Facebook nowadays that are just, pretty much from pictures of the bikes or saying what happened. And even since Moto247 started back in 2014, it seems like there's been a million pages since. And when I first saw your page, I really loved it, because basically what you just said, how it breaks down every rider's injury. Because I know a lot of them, when they say they get hurt, they're like, okay, I'm hurt, whatever, the most generic post, and then it leaves everyone in the dark for a month or two until they get back. Then if they're riding not up to their potential, there's people on social media, how negative it always is, and they flip out and just pretty much, just talk crap about them all the time. So I really like your post and how you go into detail of exactly on how every injury is and what's going to, how's it going to affect the rider moving forward.
That comment you said there about those generic injury update posts, that used to drop.
Because I could watch
the crash happen and go, I already know what it is. And then the rider would come on and go, oh, I just got a few bumps and bruises. And then I'm sitting there going, I know you dislocated that shoulder. Why don't you just say it? Like, it sort of would drive me crazy that they wouldn't bring this stuff out. So I try to bring that to light. And I've been trying to reach out to some of the guys and encourage them to, confirm with me so I can get information out quicker. Because it's our sport's pretty brutal. People are going to crash. It's just part of it, and you're going to get hurt. So why not show people what's going on? And when you do come back and you do get that good result, show that you did have this injury. Don't talk about it like a month or two after the fact that you've been, struggling a few weeks, and it's like, oh, well,
the Cooper
being a prime example, last year's motocross where he broke his hand at Washougal, and you find out weeks after the season's finished and you're like, Well, okay, that makes everything understandable now, but you still were a badass that you went 1-1 at the last round with a, you know, potentially still healing from a... Yeah, just wanted to bring that information out, but...
Yeah, and I love that, because I think, well, I'm not for sure on it, but I know that people within the industry, they probably know what's going on with other teams and stuff, or let's say if a rider is going to, his deal ends that year, you know, if something like Justin Cooper, and he didn't have a ride lined up for this year, I would think they would know, but just all the fans in general, I think they need to know what's going on, and because, you know, there's a lot of people on social media that don't know or that really care about the rider, and yeah, they have no idea. Like, that one was a really good example because we were all like, what the heck? We all expected him to win or just be right up there with Jet all summer long, and yeah, after Washougal.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a weird thing, but that, he's not the first, and he probably won't be the last. Everybody seems to hide these things for ages, tend to help them do it for some reason. So anyway, we're just trying to bring out some more information for like you said, for the fans. You know, you don't want to know, have your favorite rider just disappear for a couple of months and you can't figure out why. So just trying to bring that info out.
Yeah, it sucks too, because I can see their side, because they don't want to constantly be telling people, I'm hurt again. But yeah, like you said, it's a dangerous sport, and it, you know, there's only a couple riders, like maybe Tomac or a couple other guys that don't have that many injuries. Like, they're probably always banged up, but you know, nothing that puts them out of the races. But it seems like everyone's at some point in time going to get hurt, and I don't know, I think it's best to come clean and tell everyone. But yeah, it's kind of, it seems like it's in between like a rock and or a hard place or whatever, because you're like,
oh bit, yeah, I got hurt.
Or if you can kind of like tough it out and ride, and you don't want to let your competition know that, you know, you have some weakness if it's whatever injury it is, you know? So yeah, it seems like it's tough for those guys, but yeah, I kind of get on that side, but yeah, I wish everyone would be more open about it, but it's definitely cool seeing all your posts. Like, well, not cool seeing who's hurt, but, you know, at least we know what's going on with riders, you know?
Yeah, that's one funny part of this is like, you know, I'm putting up these injury posts and making out like it's all, you know, awesome information and stuff, which it is. But don't get me wrong, I don't like writing those things about people that have, you know, broken a leg or broken an arm. It is that they've done. You know, it's not right. As such. That's just part of it. So, you know, I figure you're better off to know the information and then to hide it. And it doesn't bring me joy to write those things, but it is what it is. You know, I've got a job in the physio world because of people, you know, people trip over in everyday life, you know, so it's just how the things are in life.
Oh, for sure. So right now, unfortunately, we have a handful of riders that are out going into the 2022 season, and it's not, well, a couple of those guys not looking good. For like, obviously it affected Osborne, but I guess I'll let you go into detail of, you know, those handful of riders.
Yeah. Look, as soon as, that, you know, the end of season motocross has that couple of weeks off. And as soon as these guys start back into that supercross swing for preseason, you know, testing and everything, the list basically starts itself almost immediately. And unfortunately the one that really kicked off things was that really put a downer on it was, Bobby Piazza, literally day one of him going back on a supercross, and he's popping up that he's had a massive compound fracture of his wrist. So, you know, like, it's straight away, you know, the supercross season claimed somebody pretty early on. You know, and it's just like I keep saying, it's just how this sport is. It's just brutal. And it wasn't even his fault. I've spoke to Bobby. He had a chance. You know, it's just one of those things. It just took the load and it snapped. And then put it in the face of it. So it's, yeah, pretty bad timing on that one. And then the other one, the main other one that's popped up so far has been Levi Kitchen. And he was sort of one of those little ones where he sort of gets a little delayed on that notice. 3 weeks after the fact when he was putting up that he'd done it, and he did that scapular fracture, and he wrote in some interesting stuff that he had some minor rotator cuff damage with that, which, you know, for me, you read these updates from these guys and you try to read between the lines, and if they're of the crash with the pitch with the update, which this one didn't, but he had the x-ray, and you're sort of trying to take all that in. So you said you got some minor cuff damage. What else really mean, you know, and me knowing a few more things than probably most people, the things as I've got that physio background, you're like, all right, he's either bruised something or he's torn something, and there's something he's not telling us, and is this going to take a little bit longer than just that bone healing? And you're like, oh, all right, we'll wait and see how this plays out. And does he get back on the bike when the bone healing, which, you know, should be that 6 week mark for that particular, or is there a delay? And you're like, all right, so the bone's healed by now, what's holding us up? Is he still having, was there more than just minor cuff, you know, put those inverted commas up, you're like, minor cuff damage? Well, it might have been a bit more than that, so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Hopefully it is just that that scapular fracture, and it can heal in that 6 weeks time frame that we're talking about. And then the other one that's actually popped up, sorry,
I was just saying, good thing for him, he has 250 East that he can, you know, go back on and give him another, you know, month and a half or so.
That's positive part for the 250 guys.
That's a fallback. And
the only thing that ever really stuffs that up, I can't think of any examples, but like, say Levi, right, he's injured now and he's planning to go East, but he should, in theory, be able to be back riding the bike probably in about a week or so now, I think it is, from when he posted up that post. But say someone like, you know, two other guys on the team got injured as well. Does he then have to all of a sudden rush back because they've only got one guy or no guys going to the West Coast? And you're like, I can't think to put it in. That could always be a potential thing that they still, you know, they go, oh, we've got plenty of time, we've got East Coast, but then all of a sudden things change, you know, a week or so out, and they're like, well, that would be a bit of a bugger for him if that happened.
Yeah, for sure. That would definitely suck.
And then, yeah, so that other one that's just popped up literally this morning, or for me this morning, you guys this evening, today, whatever. Time zones are crazy. Don't try and figure it out or do your head in. But there's Joey Crown. He popped up that he was going to Paris. Managed to get a few broken bones in the, you know, days before that, which we don't have too much more info, but unfortunately he puts down number 3 for the injury list already, and we're, you know, only just cracked into the...
Not going so well this preseason
for everybody yet.
Yeah, it's not looking so good. Then the crash over in Paris, that was horrible with Febra. That was just absolutely gnarly, and really sucks for him too, because he's coming off a really good MXGP season, almost getting the title there, and now it's gonna look like the injury is gonna go right up to round one of 2022.
Well, one, the crash, the video you saw, you seem to keep getting more angles of it, and you're like, oh wow, getting worse and worse, different angles. But that he had an awesome season, didn't he, this year, and just missed that title. But then you look at this, the date he injured it on and the injury that he's got, and when the season starts, which I think was 20th of Feb, he doesn't have much time. And you know, you hear people in the media saying that he could be back, he could be all right. I look at it with a different angle and I'm like, well, normal person getting a fracture and getting surgery on it, you know, potentially having a rod or a couple of plates put in, depending on the specialist, you know, how they want to do it. That's a little...
At least, like they say, 4 to 5 months.
And then, you know, we'll worry about you doing any sport at 6 months. So I think I saw somewhere it was like 80 something days until that season starts. I can't see how that's going to happen for him. He might literally hobble onto the bike and that'll be his first time that he rides it at that first round, but it ain't going to be pretty. I can't see how that goes very well for him in the short time that he's got.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, I think that brings up a lot of questions for the GP guys. It's like, because Supercross isn't their thing, and that's what the U.S. guys focus on for like 9 months of the year. So it's kind of, you know, more of a focus in motocross. And you got these guys coming in off their MXGP seasons, riding outdoors for like the last like 10 months or so. I don't know, somewhere around there. And, you know, they're going into Paris or Geneva or something. And like, is that something that teams want to risk having their top riders go to and just the – you know, go and make money, or, you know, just go and do another race and have another race under their belt? Because after that, I'm really curious to see if any of the top GP guys are going to come over here to race a Supercross like Geyser did a couple years ago, or just go to any of the off-season races over in Europe.
You got to wonder, are they That's now blacklisted. We crossed that off. That's never happening, you know, because like he potentially now has zero testing days before, you know, the season starts. He potentially has no fitness coming into the season because he hasn't been able to train, you know, while he's doing this recovery.
You've also then got to look, was
that whatever he got paid for his, you know, show up fee for Paris, was that going to cover the win, you know, win bonuses or, you know, podium bonuses that he potentially could get at round 1 to 4, you know, of the next MXGP season? Was that race really worth it for him? Hardly any, you know, supercross training. Like he probably would have had like maybe 2 weeks or something. They're about to practice on a supercross track before going to it, whereas they're, you know, 10 months more on motocross. So in the big scheme, is it really worth it for those guys? Like, not worth
those guys, especially someone like Febres Caliper,
where he could have been the champion next year. He still might be. I'd be surprised if he makes the start of the season, which would probably put a big question mark about him getting anywhere near the top of the championship for next year. So yeah, it's a big issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it sucks because like, I really want to see all the GP guys and the guys over here in the States battle out and, you know, battle in the off season Supercross races or MX Nations or whatever it is, just to see the those two different series, you know, ride to get the riders in there. Race together, I mean, and yeah, after that, I'm like, I don't know if I want to see that anymore because I was really rooting for him this year and to get that title. And, you know, Herlings rode his butt off and somehow got that after his injuries, which I totally forgot about his injuries earlier this year as well. We definitely have to talk about that a little bit, but yeah, it sucks because, yeah, if he lines up week one with, let's say, a week maybe of riding, not even, it's like, I know the GP season is really long, but those guys are absolutely fast and those tracks are always fast over there. So that just brings up, you know, more possible dangers of getting hurt again.
Yeah, from
you want to see those crossovers with MXGP guys,
right? The AMA guys, but you know, the timing when it all can happen just doesn't give much, you know, leeway if something like this does happen before the next season starts. I think too, but this Paris race was a bit later in the year than it usually would be because of the MXGP season going a bit later because of all this COVID stuff, you know, just stuffing everybody's normal seasons, basically. It's sort of thrown everything around still. So there's still that hope that, you know, when seasons and, you know, schedules can go back to normal, what was normal, and pick the dates that they actually want to do these things a bit better, that you get more time. But any sort of injury like this one for February is pretty severe. So, like, he's on that longer end of the recovery time frame, you know, so it makes that harder. But, you know, even just something as simple as, like, a broken collarbone, you know, for 6 weeks, say, it's still going to take half of his prep time away for this, you know, the upcoming season. So yeah, it's a bit difficult, but yeah, you just want him to just all enjoy the ride and be on the tracks together. So we can all as fans just sit there and go, cool, they finally crossed over. Oh, he did beat such and such did beat the AMA guy. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. You just always want to bench race to play out on the track for real, don't you?
Yeah, and it's weird too because like whenever they do like MX and Nations, they're always like, not saying their excuses, but because I live over here in the States, I went to MX and Nations at Redbud back in 2018, yep. I think. And the track was just like a GP track, and it was right after their season, and I think it was like 3 weeks after the guys over here in the Lucas Oil Outdoors, and so you know, like they're kind of excuses, but you know, I think it just, you know, fits better for those guys, but. I just mean, it seems like no time where they're on a level playing field and can go at it. Where, because I know all the guys in the GP over in Europe say they're faster than the same over here. So I wish there would be like a championship they can do, kind of like how MotoGP is, how the main street bike racing championship is MotoGP. And they have a pro series over here in the States. But if you're a top guy, you go over there. Where it's kind of weird over here because there's a lot of top guys over here that could win over there and, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. You really wish they could have that one series that, you know, all the top guys competed in, and, you know, that way you wouldn't have to have these sort of bench racing conversations where you everything's a hypothetical. But yeah, I can't see the day where anything like really, you know, gets off the ground. It's just something that's probably a pipe dream.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because I think motocross over here is so different. We got our own rules. They got their own rules over there in Europe. And plus, we got supercross over here in the States where, unless like we're both on the same schedule, just motocross or supercross and moto, I don't think that's ever going to be, you know, really a equal playing field at all or level playing field at all.
No, and but you know how the supercross lost FIM tag for this year, and the FIM was looking for a new promoter for a World Series for it. I do wonder if that gets off the ground for next year, sort of thing, like 2023 or something. And if they do sort of come up with that, you know, FIM Supercross Series, maybe it doesn't just happen in the States anymore. I wonder if that will actually get anywhere, and maybe that would be the thing that gets going. But it's still going to be pretty hard to outdo Supercross because it is just so cool. You know, I've been to a fair few rounds in my time over coming over at different times, and there's nothing like it. It's the best. So yeah,
like I don't know, like I kind of see that going somewhere, like maybe with we're talking about it in the last episode with Josh Cartwright, how like potentially like guys like his speed that are, you know, right outside of the top 10, maybe them going over there. But like I don't know, I just maybe over 5 to 10 years there'll be something. But like right after the FIM announced that, I was like, oh cool, because everyone over here hates the FIM. So like that was
Really...
Then they posted that post about looking for a new promoter overseas there. I'm like, oh crap, we might have some competition here for Supercross.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if it does get anywhere, right? But I don't see it overtaking the AMA.
You guys have got
it down pat now. You know, it's established. You've got X amount of rounds. You go to all these different cities. And like I said, it's the best series to take a fair bit of effort
and attract the
riders away from the AMA to this new series that does actually get anywhere. I don't think it'll change. Like I said, 5 to 10 years is a minimum time before that would probably even start to have any hold on it.
Yeah, for sure. So which rider do you want to talk about? I think we talked about most of the guys that are hurt right now. Actually, you want to talk about Zach Osborne? He just announced, a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, that really caught me off guard. Well, after seeing all the posts he's made throughout the year about that injury being a nagging injury, I can kind of see it, but I don't know. I guess I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Things back. Anyone who's had back injury sort of knows that it never fully goes away, and no matter what you do, it's not like if you break your arm, you can plate it, or sorry, collarbone, you plate it, and it sort of just basically comes good, and you know, nowadays 2-3 weeks you're back riding. The back just doesn't seem to do that, no matter whether you do surgery, whether you do all these, you know, rehab exercises to strengthen core muscles and stuff. You always tend to have some sort of effect, you know, ongoing, that you sort of either maybe can't perform, you know, 100%, you might be, you know, 95-96%, but or it might be that you wake up sore the next day, you know, and it's just not the same soreness that you would normally get, and it just makes you stiff through your movements, and you can't then just jump straight back into your normal, you know, training regime for the next week. You got to sort of delay it, get therapy and all that sort of stuff. And that seems to be what Zach was talking about with what actually want to do the retirement thing, but it sort of was a long going saga. Like when he first put up that post back in February, when he missed a couple of supercross rounds, it seemed like it was only a minor thing. Like he sort of said, oh, minor back strain, and I'll be off for it. I'll miss this round. And I was like, oh yeah, cool, you know, reported on it, you know, wrote up he's probably had a minor strain or a minor, you know, joint sprain, which is something really small, and it'd be back in a week or two. And then it was 3 weeks and 4 weeks, and then he didn't come back for the whole supercross season. And then, you know, he turns up at the first round of the outdoors and didn't look like himself. He was, you know, pretty average on that day. And then, you know, he runs Colorado, and he didn't really, I don't think he even raced all that day, did he?
How much?
And then that was the end of it. And sort of then you start seeing all these videos. One of the rehab guys near him, and he's doing all these special little, you know, movements in the gym to try and stabilize and accept loads and move loads whilst, you know, maintaining his spine position, which is all well and good, but everyone knows that stuff doesn't really, you know, the loads that go through, you're on the bike, you can move as much weight as you want in the gym. It's never really going to be the same on the moto until you get back on. That's what's happened to him. He, you know, got back on the bike a couple of weeks in and just couldn't keep doing it the same way he used to do it, which really sucks.
Yeah, it seemed like he was making a ton of progress, at least from what I saw on his Instagram post. And I'm a huge fan of his, so I'm like, awesome. He's, you know, he's back on the bike. He's going to be racing at whatever round. And yeah, like you said, it just kind of get pushed back and further and further. And yeah, really sad to see, because 2020, like, he was really on it as he got that that 450 outdoor title.
That was like a career year for him, wasn't it, with that cross race he won, that Salt Lake 7, and then, you know, that season in the outdoors, it was probably one of his best that he's ever going to have. And then, yeah, just it all sort of fell apart the beginning of the next year. And but yeah, all those exercises, it looks great. Like, he looked really good in those, and, you know, he was obviously trimming up and getting strong. But like I said, this that doesn't always translate across to the moto, and it might for one moto bike and you can do it, but like I said about that recovery point, it always has some sort of effect in terms of how the backs just don't always recover, and you might not even notice you did anything to say, you know, get an injury as such on that day of riding, once you've had a back injury. But it just doesn't like the way you then sit after the race, or you lay in bed the night later, and it all just makes you, when you wake up the next morning,
you can't quite bend and touch your toes
like same as you did the day before, and, you know, you want to get on the cycle bike and you just can't quite move as freely as you want to. And then even just sitting in that, you know, flexed position while you're cycling bike, like they seem to do all the time for training, that wouldn't be comfortable either, because that's going to press on all the discs. Just keep doing it that same way and at that same intensity to be the results that he, you know, now he's basically a champion in all 450 Supercross. You know, he probably didn't want to be the guy that was running around in 10th and worse, you know, and saying his back sore every weekend. So just took the out, I guess.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. But at least he had a really long career. I think he said, like, it was 16 years long as he went overseas to the GPs for a while and came over here. Then I think it was the second year over here or something that he really started to catch on fire and do good. And, yeah, then 2020, like you said, it was a career year for him with Supercross. I totally forgot about his Supercross towards the end there. Like, he was really on it. I think
Husky, he came on at Salt Lake, didn't he?
Yeah, like, he looked really good. And then that whole outdoor season, like, and I think no one expected him to beat Tomac or anyone up front there, but he did all year long.
And funny enough, that 2020 season too, he had that major crash midway through the Supercross season, right before that, before the COVID break, that first initial break kicked in, and he had all those ribs. If I remember correctly, I've got to have to check the notes there, but I'm pretty sure he broke a couple of bits in his back as well, higher up, this injury. And he was off the bike for ages, and then luckily that break in the season happened before they went back to that 7 rounds at Salt Lake, and back in the gear when he got to Salt Lake. So, you know, it's the injury drove the next lot of results for him. So, you know, it's just our part of the sport that we're in, but, you know, he never got away from any of that stuff, it seems. And but he did have an awesome career. Like, as much as he had all those issues that everyone talks about, where he, you know, had to leave the States and that, and you hear it on the coverage all the time where they talk about him in the 10 or whatever, but, you know, had probably a more interesting career than anyone else in terms of where he went, how he did it, you know, the races he attended, even doing like this enduro scene and stuff. Like, not many guys are going to say that, yeah, I want to pro motocross race in air. Like, he's had a pretty good career, I would say.
Yeah, it looks like he had fun with it, and it was pretty cool to see him do that as well. But another rider I wanted to talk about was AC, Adamson Cerullo. Getting hurt. During the outdoors last year, was in Millville, I believe. Looking back, that it was where he pulled out, I mean. And
he pulled out at Millville. Yeah.
And so now, from what I saw, he posted that he has it fixed and everything should be good for 2022. But what do you think about that? Do you think he'll be back to his old form for that season?
Well, his injury is an interesting one, all right, because it's not just a broken bone or he tore a muscle. It's a nerve injury, right? So where he was just having this issue where his hand would go numb, and that's from his old, or not all of his hand, but part of his hand would go numb because his old nerve is the one that was affected. It's your funny bone for anyone listening and wondering where the hell I'm talking about. If you bang your elbow, that's basically the one that you get your funny bone sensation where it, sends your arm into that sort of numb, spasmy, tingle feel. But they basically had to move that nerve point in his elbow to get it away, what they call an entrapment or an impingement. And it's funny that he got, because if you remember, all started before Supercross last year in about December, and he had the little procedure done before the Supercross season started, and they thought that would fix it, where they just cut some tissue away from around it to begin with. And he got partway through the Supercross and then he broke a collarbone at, I think it was a Lando 1 or 2, one of those rounds, and then just continued to have issues with it through motocross. But
he's since had that
major relocation of that nerve, so they take it out of the nerve location, out of that elbow point where it is your funny bone, and they basically bring it inside your arm a bit further. Look, that's cool. It's just a big thing to do. But he seems to be back riding. Like, you watch all these vlogs that he's doing nowadays, and he's back, seems to be, going pretty good. It's just a case of whether, with the nerve, whether the tissue starts to grow around it where they've relocated it and to cause any patients or anything. But ideally, this fix that they've done is the end of it. But you've got to wonder, he's had a lot of issues over the years. Is this just another one in the list?
Yeah, for sure. And it was weird for him because I remember watching him grow up, and obviously, as everyone knows, he was like the fastest one for pretty much, or not pretty much, his whole amateur career. He's beating up on everyone and just gapping everyone. And I don't think he really got hurt that much. Then going into his pro career, it was like injury after injury after having a lot of success in his rookie season in Supercross and back in, I think that was 2014. And to see that happen really sucks, because when he moved up to the 450s, he was really looking good. Had some good rides during the Supercross season. And it really sucks to see that happen. And hopefully he can come back and have it normal. And it kind of sucks that it's kind of a question mark, it seems like, though, where it seems like it'll be good. But
the nerve thing is just different, like I said. But it's not a bone where once it's healed it's good. The nerve, there's not many people, the nerves regenerate, they don't necessarily repair. Like if you cut a nerve in half and you put it back together, it doesn't just repair that spot, it regenerates. So it grows, basically reforms itself from the start of it all the way down the length of the cord and then back again. And that's how it, keeps itself healthy. So, if you think that the nerve starts in your spine, the ones for your hand or your ulnar nerve starts up in your neck, and it's got to run tip and back, and it'll only regenerate at a millimeter, which is, I don't know what that is in your imperial system. Sorry, I'm talking metric over here, but it's a very small, amount. And it's got to go that all the way down and all the way back, generated right. Once, that's a year, that's 18 months, 2 years that they say that the nerves can. So he's got a fair bit of time that he could still get some improvement out of this, or he could go the other way too. So he's got to watch the space, I guess. You'll know he'll be going all right, his consistent results by mid-season.
Yeah, just fingers crossed on that one. And that one's, like you said, with the nerve injury, it's one of the weirdest ones. Like, I didn't know too much about it, but from just everything I was reading and seeing, it's like, who knows?
Exactly.
Good fan. And always watching his vlogs, and really hope to see him up front there. But I have a long list of riders here from last year.
Yep.
I guess we can get into, if you want, Jeremy Martin coming back this year from his injury.
Yeah, that was cool too, wasn't it? He was one of those... He had excuse the language, but a shit, didn't he? We'd start straight away in Supercross, that getting landed on, and that was the end of him for basically the year, pretty much, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was horrible because I think that was in Orlando, and he goes down. Was it the first corner, I believe? Then his brother
that first straightaway after.
Then Alex goes down like two corners, maybe three corners after that. I think it was like on the first lap. And it's like both of them were out like instantly from not even a minute into the race, like 30 seconds. This is ridiculous to see.
It's crazy.
Is he looking good coming into this season?
Yeah, look, he should be fine. She should be all good. Like the fact that he was able to sort of race some of those rounds in the outdoors there, even with broken bone, it should be fine. Do that bone that he'd broke in his wrist, and look, I've got a little personal experience. I've broken it too, but it's the scaphoid, and most people that break their wrist will probably tell you that was one of the ones that they got, as well. But it's a
that just sits at the bottom of your thumb
in the middle of that wrist joint there, and it only gets ply from one end of the bone. So if you break it in the wrong spot and it ends up in two pieces, it basically floats along and does nothing itself, which is and so
it's not necessarily
like it's painful, obviously, but you can strap your wrist and support it and wear the braces like he was doing. You get like weaker grip strength because of it. And so obviously when the bike starts bucking a bit, you got less chance of holding onto it. And hence that funny crash he had at the at Ironman where his season ended, where he sort of over scrubbed and couldn't quite bring it back and whatever and crashed. That was probably in some part because of that. So now that he had that surgery, he'll be back
on the bike. He's probably one of those guys that's going to be aiming for the East Coast just to give himself, heaps of time to recover. But I don't see him, having any issues with that wrist at least. And now that's been like that injury talking about from Supercross, that first round there at Orlando was a shoulder dislocation. He'll have had plenty of time, in this whole period to strengthen it and get some more stability in it. So I don't see that being an issue either. Shoulders are usually, if they go out once, they're pretty good. When they go back in, it's more only if they start going out multiple times, which obviously with our sport, that's a concern that it could happen at any point. But, if he stays off the ground, it should be all sweet.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, last outdoor season, he was looking really good and challenging, Lawrence up there for that title. Or not for the title. I guess he was pretty far back in the points, but for the wins there towards the end of the season there. And I think everyone was in shock because, knowing that he was just, he was hurt and just getting on the bike and not too much longer after he got a moto win. I think he got an overall win. I'm not too sure. Bad memory.
Yeah, he got a couple.
Yeah. Towards the end.
Yeah, you'd wonder what that season would have looked like for him if he hadn't got a couple of those injuries along the way, like especially for the outdoors, because, the rounds that he did turn up and he wasn't, like we said, he was riding injured, and he was still winning races and stuff. Like, what could he have done, That's the key for all this, isn't it? Like, you wonder, we talked about, like, the MXGP guys and AMA riding together and how cool that would be if they could do it in one. And how cool would it be if every rider could be fully fit for the whole season and not have to talk about the guys that went out and could have won the races, It'd be awesome, but unfortunately that's just the sport, isn't it? We lose guys all the time.
Yeah, it sucks because that championship would have been really good between Jet Lawrence, Jeremy Martin, and Justin Cooper there, and Cooper and both the star guys, Cooper and Martin, getting hurt, and it's like, come on, like that would have been a really good championship, but Jet ended up getting that. But who knows, he might have got it anyways. All three of those guys are looking really good, but yeah, it's like kind of in all sports, how if everyone was healthy, it's like the what if, but especially motocross. Yeah. How just crazy it is and how many guys are getting hurt. Yeah, it really sucks.
Yeah, it's a bit of a list every year. Like, just Supercross alone last year, there was nearly 90 injuries that I recorded. Like, just part of it. I don't know how many guys tried to line up for them, but there was 90 people that were injured, so it's a fair few.
Yeah, that's one thing with Supercross. I don't think that many people know how gnarly it is. And even, let's say, if you haven't went to a Supercross race ever, then you go there, you're like, holy crap, like the jumps are so steep and everything. But I think once you talk to riders too, it's like you really understand how gnarly it is. I guess you can't really fully grasp it until you actually ride it, but it's like like what you said earlier on in the podcast when like all the riders getting hurt in the first, you know, day, a couple weeks in the training for the next season.
Yeah,
it's like motocross is dangerous enough as it is, and they have supercross, and that's another thing that forgot to mention earlier on in the podcast, where the GP guys have motocross all year long, so that's all they focus on, bike setup wise and everything, like mentally just all motocross. Where in the United States, it's like, okay, you're focused on supercross, which is extremely hard, then okay, throw that out the door in May, because we got the outdoor season coming up, and you got 2 weeks to prep for the first round, whatever, if it's Hangtown or Paula or whatever.
Yeah, just focus completely in a couple of days. You'll be sweet. It's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I feel bad for those guys. It's like, once they get supercross down, then yeah, they get a whole other thing to learn. And it's always funny to hear how much stiffer the suspension setup is over here in the States rather than the GP guys.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot softer range over there, because they never actually run it that hard, so they don't know that they've got further to go back, really. Like, that's the AMA guys are used to just running that, you know, rock hard setup for supercross, that they don't realize they can still go softer and be okay. So yeah
for sure, it's always funny to hear the stories of the like the GP guys trying our bike setup and like, holy crap. Or vice versa, it's like always funny to hear.
Yeah, it's nuts.
But what else do you want to talk about? I guess we have a couple riders, but you don't necessarily have to get into all of them, because as you said, it's a long list that every year that we have. But I guess McAdoo is the one we can possibly talk about. He's looking really good all year long in Supercross, and you know, early on in the Motocross Championship over here, got hurt in that really awkward crash too.
Yeah, his was an interesting one, eh? Like, he you know, essentially did an ACL injury, but he did it in a slightly different manner. You know, he still had to have almost this repair and recovery time, but he didn't just tear the ACL ligament in his knee in two pieces. He actually tore the ligament with a piece of the bone off the tibia, which is your shin bone, basically. And yeah, so he basically had to get that bone piece with the ligament screwed back into place, and then, you know, recovered that way. It's a slightly similar but different injury type. It's amazing how you can do almost the same thing but be completely different and have, you know, different outcomes. So the injuries are just nuts. But he's back on the bike as well. He seems to be going well, which is great news for him. But he had a long period there, just in, you know, in a brace and not much going on with his leg, but he seems to be, luckily for him, back doing everything as per normal, you know, back on the bike already, you know, early in November. So that's a great thing. He's had plenty of time to repair and recover and build fitness back up. So I'd say he's probably actually one that you probably wouldn't be putting onto the East Coast and delaying him. He might even be one that just goes in the West Coast straight away. We'll have to see.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see. And it's cool they kind of have a long break going into Supercross, because I know a lot of guys like to rush it. If it's the riders themselves or the teams rushing them to the first possible round that they can race, and that's always a really sketchy thing as well.
Yeah, that's the bad part of the sport, and the way that the seasons sort of just run into each other, like you're touching on, about how there's only sort of a week or two between, you sort of flip from one to the other straight away. Like, the guys don't necessarily give themselves all that recovery time that they need. Like, you know, an injury in normal circumstances, let's just say the ACL, like, it's a 6 month, you know, plus sort of recovery time. But, you know, we've been seeing guys doing, like, I think RJ Hampshire was down to like 10 weeks that he was back riding a bike after it, you know, just because he didn't want to miss the next season, you know. So
yeah, that
they
was
push themselves
one.
To shorten that recovery time as much as possible.
Yeah, that was a crazy one, because I watched the NFL a lot, and I know it's a lot different with the guys in the NFL having to, you know, run and cut and do everything, so that ACL is going to be like really affected there. But yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, I don't know how, what's the normal timeline on the ACL injury, but normally I thought it'd be like way longer than the 10 weeks or so that it was. Kind of blowing me away, honestly.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, you say like the timeline, right? So like, Now, normally we say 6 months is return to sport for an ACL at best. If you're doing everything well and you know when you get to that point and you're doing like single leg hops, the distance that you can do on your normal leg versus the repaired leg, they're about 80%, right? And then you can go back and do sport, which usually 6 months for some people are a bit slower. It's sort of out to 9, right? But along that path, there's all these milestone weeks of, you know, where you can start doing things. And usually things like just even jogging in a straight line, it's sort of only getting around that 12 to 16 week mark. And there's, you know, RJ Hampshire back on a pro motocross start gate at about 10, 11 weeks. So like, it's crazy. Like if you know, you're talking to, you know, an NFL guy, they'd only just be starting to jog in a straight line, you know, at slow speed, maybe on a treadmill sort of thing. They wouldn't even be considering getting back on the park to do things like you said, like, you know, cut, sidestep, you know, clashing with other people or tackling. They wouldn't be doing any of that for at least 6 months. So, you know, it's a massively different time frame that, that our guys work on compared to just...
Hey there.
Yeah.
Okay, you just cut out there for a second. But yeah, like I know, like I said, it's a lot different with the two different sports. But in the NFL, it seems like there's a lot of players that, even I think a couple this year maybe, I'm not too sure on that, but that tear their ACL and it's like, let's say, September or October, and they're questioning if they're going to be able to make week one and like the next late August, early September, where it's like, you know, like yeah, a really long thing and a huge process where they're going to miss mini camp and all this off season activities with the team. And then the guys over here in Motor is like back on it in no time pretty much.
Well, and for us, our guys too can continue to sometimes race through when they don't have an ACL. And I'm sure if you go around the, you know, the pro pits at arm one and ask them, do you have an ACL in both knees? A fair few of the guys are going to say, well, actually, no, I don't have one in this knee, or I don't have one in that knee, or some might even say, I don't have them in any knee, and they don't get them repaired. They just ride through. And then, you know, they wait till their season's over or their career's done, and then they get them repaired because, you know, otherwise they end up having three or four repairs, a la, you know, Ryan Villopoto. I think he had three repairs on one knee. He definitely had two, but you know, that, you know, it's serious that once you do repair it, you know, first race back, you're going to do it again anyway. So if it's not causing any pain, they just ride through without them.
Yeah, true enough.
But you couldn't do that in the NFL, no way.
Oh no, yeah, you would be like so scared running out there. Just like one hit, would you'd be out. I think, like, I don't even think that'd be a question. But yeah, I forgot a couple riders are saying they didn't have an ACL. I forgot if it was like a YouTube video or what it was, but I was just kind of blown away by the amount of riders that, and I know there's more that probably, like you said, that don't have one, but, or even both possibly, but yeah, I remember hearing a couple, and I'm like, oh my God, that has to be crazy.
Yeah, it's really nuts. And funnily enough, there's actually been some, like I hate reading the research, but it's part of what we have to do to sort of stay on top of things in the physio and health world. But there's been some things coming out in the last few years where certain, you know, NFL or in Australia, it's AFL and NRL as the football, you know, and they're doing studies on these guys have gone back to the game with no ACL and how they're surviving and all that, the training sort of stuff that they're doing. And I just look at that and I'm like, oh man, all I can see is you're just rubbing something together in your knee that you shouldn't be, and you're basically asking for a knee replacement in a couple of years' time when it should have been like 50 years' time that you're getting the knee replacement. Like, it's just, yeah, it's one of those things. But for us, at least in the moto land, if you can keep your foot on the peg, which seems to be, you know, the hot technique that to do at the moment, a la Jet Lawrence, Hunter Lawrence, Roxon, all those sorts of guys, you know, if you can keep your foot on the peg, there's a fair chance you don't actually need to worry about, you know, touching your foot on the ground and therefore, you know, catching your ACL. So it's, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that they can get by without it, but others can't.
Yeah, it's like, it seems like a weird thing to think about where, like, what should I do if that happened to you, if you're like a pro rider, you're like, I don't know, like, maybe just go without it, but yeah, who knows, it might cause more problems, you know, later down the road, but yeah, it seems really sketchy. But
definitely,
like I said, I have a long list, but I really don't want to get into everyone. But I guess the big one is Ken Roczen. I know it was a couple years ago, but what is your take on the whole Roczen thing? I know Or we all know that he had multiple gnarly injuries to his arms, and I don't think no one really predicted him to come back. And if he were to come back to be riding at the level that he is, like, I know he's not 100% like he was back in whatever year that was, 2017 maybe? Somewhere, you know,
yeah,
around
2017.
There. Because he was absolutely hauling, and I think he had a few wins racked up early on in January in the Supercross season. But anyways, he's still looking really good, and he's still a title contender, which is really crazy to see.
Yeah, look, it's an amazing story, isn't it? The things that he's gone through. One, you know, that 2017 year where that main major injury that they replay all the time, but then even the following year to stick his other hand in Cooper Webb's back wheel and have similar things happen to the other hand. Like, he's gone through a fair bit, and you know, for injury side of things for our sport, like, you can get away with a lot, right? Like, we're talking just a second ago about, you know, guys riding without ACLs and getting away with it, but when you talk your hands and your arms, that's where our sport really has a massive impact on the body and, you know, our ability to control and turn the bike. So for him to then, you know, get the movement that he's got back in those areas and then the strength and to be able to then still, you know, go out and win multiple Supercrosses last year and multiple outdoors and be in the championship hunt for both titles, like, it just blows you away. But you, all the things that then pop up along the way for him where things start maybe just falling off a little bit and, you know, he has all these other illnesses that pop up and you wonder, do they relate? Is it just the fact that, you know, that area of his arm and his wrist and his hand, maybe there's still things going on there. Like, I'm sure he's got probably scar tissue in there and those things will be, you know, tearing and remodeling and happening all the time, so that creates swelling that would come and go, and he's probably going to have soreness in there all the time. Like, it's just one of those things. He's doing the best he can with what he's got now, which is still pretty awesome compared to anybody else with that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's just still crazy to think that he can even just one come back onto the bike, let alone you know, race as well as he has. Like, he's got somebody else's elbow in there. Like, it's a cadaver implant that they've got in there for him. Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, now after all the time, and yeah, like, it was hard enough on that first injury. Like, everyone was just speechless, and have it happen, or another injury happen again the following year after he got back with Cooper Webb. It's like he couldn't catch a break there at all, and it seemed like a while after that he was had a ton of other things bugging him as well, and it's just really unfortunate to see. But yeah, he's really ripping in the outdoor season. He looked really good. I know there's a lot of haters on social media, which I think I talk about a lot, or probably a little bit too much on the podcast here, but because there's always going to be them. But I hate it whenever they talk about Ken. It's like, dude, do you not realize what he went through? Like, I don't know how he's riding and even qualifying for a main event. Like, it's insane.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Like, they forget so quickly what he's gone through and what he continues to go through just to be out there. It's insane that they can even question, you know, what he's doing and what's happening with him. And, you know, everyone has a bad day from time to time, but he's managing all these things and still doing, you know, top level, you know, top five, top 10, whatever it is, that, you know, on his bad day, he's still killing it. But, you know, the interesting part with this for me watching him has been how his results have sort of progressed each year now since those injuries, and how his ability to maintain a season has improved. And I think that's just kind of like what we're getting at with AC a little bit, about that time frame of how long it can still recover over that period for his injury. Kenny's going to be very similar in that sense, where everything remodels, everything just sort of regenerates a bit further along, and he's going to get more used to it. And just generally, he hasn't then had any injuries. I don't think he's had anything really since that point, other than a couple of illnesses that he's slowed him down. But all those things are then, he's building more fitness, he's building more bike time, he's building and building and building, and ideally all those little niggles and stuff that are going along and the illnesses, he's just getting stronger from. And so you do wonder, because last year was his basically his best since all that stuff started happening, right? Is the one coming going to be even a little bit better than the one that's just gone. And if it is, well, there isn't much further for him to go before he was at the top again. So, you know, you look at it like that and you think, well, could this 2022 season be the best yet for Kenny post all these injuries? Be interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. Like early on Supercross, everyone thought he was going to win the title. The majority of people. And then, yeah, the same with outdoors. He looked really good. And a couple races he was off. But still, like, overall, he was really good. And it definitely pumped to see him out here. But one more injury I wanted to touch on was the Jeffrey Herlings one. That was, I think, a few months ago now in the GPs. And somehow he came back and still won the title after that.
The shoulder blade one where he got landed on from the guy that he was rather pissed at to start with and after that happened. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, all the drama he posts up on Instagram about it. That's kind of another crazy crash like Febra's where the video looked gnarly, then the injury was pretty crazy too. Or I guess his wasn't, you know, obviously that bad because he's back racing, but just a gnarly looking crash.
Funnily enough, you talk about that injury, right? So, like, it was a broken scapula, which we're talking about the same thing for Levi Kitchen earlier in the podcast where he's got the same thing. But Herlings basically got it broken at the beginning of that moto, finished that moto, won that moto, then took off, didn't ride moto 2, and then I think he missed one race, which was the following week, and then he was back the race after and won that race again. And had the broken shoulder blade still, scapula. So that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, like, I thought, well, he would be out for a while, but even when he came back, I'm like, okay, maybe he'll be outside the top five. Like, I don't know how bad that injury is, but I know Geyser's really fast. A lot of those guys, you know, Febra, you know, I can definitely name it, five, the eight guys that are really on it over there. And, yeah, just to see him come back, and not only come back and get some points. He came back and won a lot of races after that. Really hard to believe that was actually true. Like, watching that, like, oh my God. Like, have so much respect for him after that.
It's amazing, isn't it, what he can do? But, like, there's two things I'll point out for this one, right? Like, one, it's his shoulder blade, but yes, he broke it, right? So he broke it. It wasn't a complete in two fracture from, if anyone's watching his Behind the Bullet series that Red Bull's putting out on YouTube, there's a, you know, good section on it in there about it. And so it was broken, yeah, but it wasn't like it was broken in two, which was probably a good thing. But it's still painful. And the best part for the shoulder blade is that it's supported by so much muscle. It's not actually the structural thing that you're standing on, like your legs, say. So he could probably get around that a lot easier. He just had to then somehow manage the pain. And if you can manage the pain, you can pretty much do what you wanted to do. So that sort of helped him. But you got to go back and look at his history too. And you can think, like, all right, he's probably got a fair pain tolerance, because if you remember back in his 250 days, I think it was the year that Jordi Tixier won the championship at, like, the last round, but that was the year that Herlings managed to crash, I think it was an 85 or a super mini or something like that, that he was doing it like a fun ride day somewhere and broke his femur. And he came back and rode those last couple of races with the broken femur with the rod in it, you know, and he was way early on coming back for that. Like, the guy's ridden pain in his time to try and win championships. So he's a pretty, people like to put shit on him all the time because he's, you know, he's the sand king and all this sort of stuff. And, he's the fastest guy on the planet at times, but they like to try and take him down. But you got to have respect for the guy. I mean, like, the things he's ridden through and how fast he is, like, how can you not like him?
Yeah, I know. Like, he comes off as really cocky, but, yeah, like, after all the things he's been through and gets back out on the track and not only rides, but he seems like he almost wins them all. It's like, yeah, I just gained so much respect for him. And, like, I don't follow the GPs that much, but after that, I'm like, man, this guy is one tough dude that is absolutely, I would have to say, the fastest on the planet as well.
Yeah, definitely. You do wonder, but with, like, the bit about coming off cocky, that's the language barrier, that sort of he doesn't have the same vocabulary when he's talking in English that makes the, you know, smooths out and softens some of his, you know, some of how he appears to everybody.
Yeah, true.
You know, or is it just, maybe he is, you know, maybe he probably should be, like, he's freaking world champ how many times, five or something now, and you know, he's got the cool cars and stuff that he's obviously been able to buy, and yeah, like, he probably could be a bit cocky. He's freaking fastest guy on the planet, so.
Yeah, like, people talk crap about him, but honestly, like, there's one guy to do it. He, you know, he definitely, he's the guy to do it. He deserves it, I guess. But,
yeah.
I think that was the last rider I wanted to touch on, but I have a couple more things here before you go. What's your whole thing, man, on braces? I know there's a big discussion, and you got Ryan Hughes that seems like he hates them all, and there's always arguments on his comment section and on his Instagram post, which I actually, like, I normally I don't read the comments that much because, like I said earlier, social media is really bad and negative, but it's always funny to read those. But it seems like it's a big topic or a big discussion between, you know, wearing braces or not, like wrist braces, knee braces, and then the neck brace as well.
Yeah, it's a funny topic point at the moment, and Ryan Hughes seems to drive a lot of those comments, just the way that he's got that stand against sort of anything and in that area, in terms of protection and stuff, really, like, but for me on that physio side of things, and obviously the pro level is completely different, right? Like, if you're at the pro level and you think you can take something off to improve your technique or save you a second or whatever, a lap on the track, well, you know, you're potentially going to try it, right? But for everybody else is 100 plus grand a year from, you know, whatever team to go and race Supercross, I'd be putting most of them on. The one that I personally don't use is a neck brace, and I've had a few things with those where I don't see the value in them anymore currently on current designs. I haven't obviously tried any of those new ones that have just come out recently from Atlas that are really slim and that, but the old style ones, you know, from different companies, not just the original Leitz and stuff, which is where Ryan's views have all originated from. I'm talking some of the newer versions of those. I still don't like them. I don't like the way they fit people and the way that the general population don't seem to be able to wear them properly. It's just a bit of a catch-22 for me at this stage. But wrist braces I use for me because, on one hand, because I've had a previous injury, and I think it's only useful in those circumstances of, like, trying to support something previously. But knee braces, I would not ride without them no matter what. The fact that they just give you some protection on from external sources, they give their protection to potential human issues. Now, they're not protecting everything, and they're not protecting your ACL, but there's just that chance that it might slow something down. I'm going to take it because I'm not getting paid, you know, X amount of money by a team to go and race every weekend. I've still got to go take my regular day job on Monday, so I'm trying to protect that sort of things.
Yeah, and it seems like riders love the knee braces, but it's kind of the majority, I don't think, like neck braces. Like, Anderson dropped his last year, same with Marvin Musquin, and it was crazy because, like, 10 years ago when the Liat first came out, that huge Liat, I think the majority of the people,
yeah, everybody wore put them on then, didn't they?
Yeah, like, all the amateurs that I've rode with had them. I didn't have one. I actually have one of those old neck rolls that Davey Millsaps used to ride with. I rode with that thing until 2012. But everyone else I knew had Liat's or whatever, the other ones, like Atlas, whenever they came out, a little bit down the road, I think. Yep. But yeah, it's crazy how it flipped now to where only a couple guys were riding with them, like Anderson and Musquin. But now, after them, I'm not sure who rides with one now. Like, there might be a couple privateers, but yeah, Sexton was one.
Yeah, I think Chase Sexton's still got the Atlas on it. Not many people are running them at that top level.
Yeah, I don't know, like, where I stand on that, but it's always funny to see Rhino's comments. But yeah, it seems like that's the one out of all of them that I think it's you can do without. Because I've talked to a couple riders where, not in the last couple years though, like the new ones, like you said, are pretty slim now, but still. I talked to riders a couple years ago where they said, like, in Supercross and Arena Cross, it was horrible to ride, you know, just
your head didn't have that much movement, where that thing was like right there under it, you know?
Yeah.
And it was definitely awkward for that. It was better in the outdoor.
That's most people's concern.
Yeah, so it's like, does that cause a potential injury because you don't have full movement, especially in a tighter track like arena cross and supercross? And yeah, it's always a hot topic that people still argue about. It's funny.
Yeah, they do. And look, that's always been the argument, isn't it? Is that reduced visibility and stuff going to cause you another injury? But like, I had the original Leitz, I had some Alpine style ones at different times. And I just found that no matter how, like, I'm only a small sort of build, and I couldn't get them to actually fit onto me the way that they were supposed to fit onto me. And then so they never actually, unlike, like, you say your knee brace, right, you're generally strapping it on, right? You've got four straps, or the old Asterix had, like, laces. So you can tighten it onto you, and it fits you, right? And even some of the new Mobius knee braces have got different thickness pads that you can put in so that it fits onto your leg, right? But the neck braces, and I might be wrong nowadays, I haven't looked at them too closely, but you couldn't get them to strap onto you tightly. Even with the chest strap and stuff, I could still always feel it bounce around. And so if it's moving while I'm just riding, well, where's it going to go when I'm upside down and I crash? Because it's going to move off my body as I'm crashing, and then it's going to fall into a different spot when I do press onto it. So it's not going to work. I always felt not working how they designed it to work in the lab, which is great, but in real life circumstances, you fall in 50 bazillion different ways and end up, you know, looking like Gumby as you fall off. But the other things that I had problems with, and you don't learn some of these things until they happen to you. Like, people can tell you that they oh, that doesn't sound right, but until they happen to you, you don't notice. And I had times where I would just literally tip over sideways in a rut, and the neck brace would lift up off my chest and be sort of halfway up my neck as my helmet caught it because of the way I was falling. And then it would push into the side of my neck rather than my helmet pushing onto it, because it would miss it. So it then created like a flip-top sort of point of view where it pushed in at a different point and made my neck move abnormally anyway. And that's sort of what made me feel uncomfortable about wearing them. So you've got to have experiences with them to know why you don't want to wear them. But until they sort of change a few things, and maybe look, that new low-lying, I think it's a Vision or something from Atlas, maybe that's the one that will change your mind. But until you try some of these things for yourself, you don't really know, and you shouldn't just go off, you know, people like Ryan Hughes's opinions, because it's based on a completely different viewpoint than yours.
Yeah, true. And I love seeing all of his videos and people arguing, and just, it's still like years later making videos on why they're not good. And it's always funny to see. And I feel like it's talked about on other podcasts. Like, I listened to Pulp, I think that was earlier this year, and it was like they talked about it for a while, and just not about neck braces. I think they did a little bit, but just Rhino and how much he pushes, like not using them. Well, all the braces too, I guess. But yeah, crazy.
Yeah, but it also goes back to too, like he's saying, don't use braces to his, you know, professional and, you know, the guys he's training. Because they're training so much, right? They're getting so much stronger. They don't necessarily need to rely on some of these things. Their body is stronger than, you know, most people's. But all the, that's where I go back to, like, the general weekend rider. They don't have, you know, hours and hours in the gym that week that then prevents them from, you know, potentially having an issue on the weekend. Whereas they should be the ones that are relying more on the protective gear because they don't have the time in the gym. So it's like I said, it's different viewpoints. It's, you got to look at it, take in your factors. What are you doing week to week? How much riding are you doing? How much strength training are you doing? Are you actually stable and controlled, or do you have other health issues that, you know, make you more susceptible to getting an injury? And yeah, factor that stuff in and make your own choice. Don't just listen to what some other crazy people that tend to, you know, rant on Facebook and social media and everywhere about that you shouldn't do things.
Yeah.
Don't just listen to them. So, but it is fun to get caught up in some of those arguments on social media sometimes. I've been in them a couple of times. It's enlightening to see what some people's viewpoints are.
Yeah, and it seems like one of the things, like, there's a lot of argument on social media, but like that, like it strikes something and all these people where they just go like all out on, like, they're defending like something that's their own. It's hilarious. I just go through and read. I don't normally say that much because I don't have that much knowledge on it, but I just go through and read them and just kind of and laugh.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? You just think, how did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah, like there's some specialist in something where it's just an average person that has like probably no experience of using one. Like I know there's probably a lot of people out there that haven't ever used one, then they're so strongly against it and they don't know, and then, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, exactly.
But one last thing here. The whole thing with McAdoo is pretty crazy this year in Atlanta Supercross. And do you think there should be a better protocol for, like, if you have a concussion or something before getting in the race? Or I don't know if they have something for, like, the next round, like if a rider gets hurt during the week or at the previous race or whatnot.
Yeah, that's a good question, right? Like, so I looked into it after that. I actually contacted the AMA and found out some of the stuff that they do have in place. And they do have a good protocol in place, right? So if you do actually get diagnosed with a concussion, they do have this return to ride program, which basically means that you can't race within 5 days of the concussion, because it's a minimum time frame that you have to do these 5 stages of recovery over, and each stage takes a minimum of 1 day to do. So they've got this really good program in, and actually at some point, I can't remember which races it was, but there was another grouping of the three races, and Marvin Muskan had a concussion at one of them, and he had to miss the middle one, and he was allowed back at the other one just purely on the time frame, because the race was, what was it, Saturday's Wednesday and Saturday, he missed the Wednesday one. So there is that in place, right? But in McAdoo's situation, the thing that I felt was missing was he didn't necessarily get the chance to be fully assessed before they let him back on the line. And you watch the video and you hear the interviews with post that, and they do talk about one of the guys that was on the track with him, checking him and asking him some questions. But it wasn't – he had a helmet on. He's on the side of the track. His adrenaline's up. You know, he knows that the track just race was red flagged, and he's going to go back and get in the gate and have a chance to keep going for the championship. So there's a lot of factors involved in that where they probably didn't get a good chance to really actually look at it properly. And it's a bit hard to explain for like the American guys over there, but over here in our NFL, we call it NRL. We don't use helmets and stuff and massive pads. They just run into each other. It's a bit more crazy. Check it out on YouTube if you want to know what I'm talking about. But we have this concussion protocol testing system over here in our sport, where they have basically a review panel watch the game, and they're a medical team, right? And they watch the game, and any sort of knock on the head, whether it's they impact head to head, whether the knee from somebody else when tackling hits the guy's head, whether the guy gets tackled and he headbutts the ground, they then review it there and then, right? So within a couple of minutes, that guy will get pulled off the side of the field, get assessed by an independent person. And if they don't pass those first couple of tests, like, you know, some balance, some simple questions about what day it is, you know, what's your name, depending on how bad it is, all those sorts of things, some cognitive things about following a finger with your eye and all that. If they don't pass those, they take him, they owe at him further. And they can't go back on until they're passed, right? So that's what I think the AMA guys missed a little bit there. They literally did one or two questions to McAdoo, and went, oh, yeah, he sounds like he's all good. But, you know, did they check that he could stand on his own 2 feet, you know, and balance on 1 foot and walk? Kind of like those DUI sort of tests, right, where when you get out of the copper, pulls you up and asks you to walk the line sort of thing. They need to do some more stuff like that and take a few more minutes. And I even said in one of the things that I wrote somewhere that even if it meant that they delayed the start point another 3 or 4 minutes, which I know that's dealt with TV coverage, but it's a red flag situation. They make it out, they make it all fit sort of thing. Why didn't they just take that a little bit extra time to make sure that he was okay? Now, look, it all worked out. He started the race, he whole shot, he ended up third or something, I think. But, you know, that could have been a completely different outcome if he did hit his head. And even just that second chance of hitting his head, say he crashed in that first corner the next start, you know, and he had that second impact injury, which is usually always the one they talk about is the dangerous one. Concussion situations, like, could it have been a lot worse? Yes. Should they have checked into it a bit more? Yes. So yeah, it's a bit of things they should work on, but they do have a good process in place when it's done. You know, a normal concussion is noticed, and they don't, you know, obviously they can't finish that race. Before they come back, they've got a good process in place.
That's good to hear that they have something in place, because I was definitely worried. Like, it was really cool to see in the moment him come back. I was worried at the same time, though, because seeing that crash was the most awkward and weirdest thing I've ever seen. And then to see him come back with his number plate, I think it's all the way off, I believe, when he came back from the restart, and his visor all messed up and everything, and coming back and still running up top with the top three guys. Yeah, like I said, or like you said, I think he got third. So he had to be up there. It was crazy, and like, it was a great comeback story after something crazy like that crash. But yeah, it's good to hear that they have a program in place. But yeah, like the NFL over here, it's kind of something similar to what you guys have, and I really like that, because it's really unfortunate for the players. But if you get hit in a game, and you know, it can be really bad, and they take them out and assess them, and you know, they might come back, or they might not, if they, you know, obviously don't pass. And yeah, it was weird after seeing that. I'm like, is he really okay to go out there? Because yeah, like you said, it could have been really bad if it was worse, and he went out and tried to race with that.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you just don't know what could have happened. Like, yes, it all worked out okay in this circumstance, but it could have been way worse. And even just, you touched on it there, right? So when he restarted the race, the bike was all mangled and his helmet was all jacked up, right? Like, he should not have been, at a minimum, allowed to restart with that same helmet. That helmet was toast at that point, right? Like, it's the visor was hanging off. He's impacted his head into the inside of it, so the lining is probably got some impact that's now reduced its effectiveness. At a minimum, he should have been forced to rechange the helmet.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if I ever thought of that, but yeah, that's a really good point, because yeah, that helmet was garbage after that thing. Hopefully they learn from this going on forward, because you know, who knows what can happen, you know, in motocross and supercross, that, you know, the whole thing is a crazy sport.
Exactly, yeah, but hopefully they do some sort of change with it, but hopefully we don't even notice it, you know. Hopefully nobody else crashes like that and has a restart sort of thing. So
yeah, definitely. But anyways, yeah, thank you so much for hopping on here today. Had a really good chat about all this. And for everyone that don't follow you, what's your Instagram tag or username?
Yeah, if you just search always.moto, you'll find us on Instagram, and we're over on Twitter on a very similar thing. You type always.moto, same on, we've got some things on YouTube and stuff as well. So yeah, but the Instagram's the main one. We put all these updates on, so we're trying to get them happening all through the season. So basically, we try and get any of those riders' injuries that we see, we get them up there so that you can find out a bit more about it. And if I haven't spotted it, if anyone tags me in them, I check into it and we put more up on there, so you can all get some injury updates if anyone's listening and wants to find out more about their favorite rider.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. To all you guys listening, it's definitely a page worth following, and probably one of the best motocross pages out there. And I'm not being biased, because you're on the podcast right now. Like, I always love reposting that and just trying to get the name out, because there's a lot of good motocross, or not good, but a lot of motocross pages, like I said earlier, that have a ton of followers, and they're kind of like a really dumb account. Like, no offense to them, but it's just, you know, like the same as the other 200 that are out there, unfortunately. But yeah, definitely, you got one of the best accounts, I think, going on right now. And yeah, really cool to see.
Yeah, appreciate that, man. And look, yeah, we try not to just repost the crash videos. We try to actually put you check the actual text underneath the photos and stuff, because that's where we are way different to anybody else's content that's going on there. So hopefully everybody gets something out of it when they're reading it.
Sweet. But yeah, anyways, thank you for hopping on, and yeah, I can't wait to have this published and people listen to it. Hopefully you get a lot more followers, because yeah, I think there should be definitely a lot more following you, and especially with all the injuries that, unfortunately, the sport of motocross, you know, gets with their pro riders.
Yeah, exactly. No, I appreciate you having us on, man. It's been awesome to have a chat and just talk about some of the stuff that's been going on in the sport. It's been great.
And I also want to give a big shout out to our newest sponsor here on the show, which is Blood Lubricants. As you guys know, it's really important to have really good oil in your bike. Be like Joey Crown, Alex Ray, Kyle Chisholm, Logan Carnow, and the whole SGB Honda team, and many more, by using Blood Lubricants. Go over to their website and use code MOTO247 for 25% off on most products they have on there. Again, that's Moto247 and all caps MOTO247 for 25% off on most products on their website. Go over there. Their link to their website is in their Instagram bio. So go over there and find them on Instagram as well at Blood Lubricants. And I'm also really excited to have a brand new grip company on board with us. I want to give a big shout out to Whiskey Throttle Grips. They make grips and apparel, half waffle, and soft compound grips. Go over and check out their Instagram at whiskey_throttle_grips. Go on there, see what they have going on and all their cool grips. And right in their bio is their link to their website. So go check them out on Instagram, hit that follow button, and click that link in the bio. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Moto247 Show. If you want to find clips of this podcast, you can go on YouTube under Moto247. And we tend to get like 2 to 4 clips of each episode up on there. And I'd greatly appreciate it if you'd hit that subscribe button. Once we hit 1K, we are giving away a custom set of Prism Designs graphics to one lucky subscriber. We're a bit away from 1,000 subscribers right now, but hopefully in no time we'll reach that 1K mark. And if you want to find us on Instagram, you can do so at moto.247, which is our main page on there. Then our podcast page on there is at the Moto247 Show. Really appreciate it if you'd hit follow on those accounts and hit subscribe on YouTube. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Peace out.